Welcome to the Codependent Me podcast. I'm Tamara Shaw, a recovering codependent, a codependent life coach, and the co-author of God Turned Mommy's Wine into Water. This podcast was created to increase the awareness of codependency and to give a more holistic look at the journey and healing of codependence. Welcome to the Codependent Me podcast. I am your host, Tamara Shaw, and today we have a very special guest. We have Sophie Delaurier. She is known, at least on Instagram, for sure, as the love and money mentor. And I like it because everybody loves to have mentors for love and mentors for money, the two areas we want to progress. So welcome to the show, Sophie.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, absolutely. So I like to give Podmatch a shout out. You know, that's how we connected. So kudos to them. And thank you so much for connecting with me and bringing this awesome podcast to this awesome episode to my audience. So Sophie, before we get into your mentoring and all of that, let the audience know a bit about your childhood and, you know, some things about yourself that you'd like to share.
Sure. Yeah, I'll give you like a high level overview of my story. And then if there's anything that you want me to lean into more, just ask a question about it. I can open it up more.
Sounds good.
My parents divorced when I was two. I mean, I actually don't really know the age, which is interesting because if you ask my mom one question, she says around two, and my dad says around five. And I think that means maybe it started at two and ended at five. I'm not exactly sure, but somewhere in around those years, my parents divorced. So fast forward, I lived with my mom and my younger brother. We were 18 months apart, and it was the three of us for a very long time. When I was about 10, my mom was in an electrocuting accident, which means she was working at a daycare as a daycare teacher. She had her bare feet wrapped around a metal stool. And back in those days, and you got to think this was probably 30 some odd years ago, when you had a flash on a camera, it would plug into the wall. So there was some of the faulty electrical stuff in the wiring of the wall. And so when the flash went to ground, which is what it did back then, it found the metal source, and that was around her feet. So she was electrocuted, which meant her feet blew up like, I don't know, eight times the size of her actual regular foot size. And so she was in a lot of pain and disabled for about 6 or 7 years. She couldn't actually walk, which had a pretty big impact on my life.
Absolutely.
From there, I wanted to be a lawyer when I was younger, to be honest with you. I wanted to be a divorce lawyer because my parents were divorced. And at that time, I was a little bit more angry, and I thought I would, you know, go after men and really protect the woman. And then I evolved into wanting to be a corporate lawyer. You know, I watched Richard Gere and Pretty Woman, and I wanted his position. And I used to watch The Y&R, The Young and the Restless. And, you know, I wanted to be Victor Newman. I always wanted to be these male leads. Seems like, you know, TV was really great at projecting man as the strength and the a money earner and the leader, and the woman as more of like the damsel in distress and the woman at home. And while now at the age of 47, I really value and honor the place a woman chooses to have for herself when she chooses to stay home. Now that I'm a mom, I understand it differently. But back then, I thought that was the weaker position.
Right.
And not having really seen many female role models in those positions, I just really identified with men, and I adopted a lot more masculine behaviors, such as competitiveness and A-type personality. I was always very good in sales because of that type of mindset. I was a great listener and a great questioner. And then because I was competitive and ambitious, sales was a natural playground for me.
Yeah, for sure.
I had many sales positions, and then I started taking coaching classes, and I started training and developing people in sales and in leadership. And I started working with the leadership teams of sales organizations and teaching them to be more coach-like in their approach so that they could really connect with their team rather than just telling them what to do, and get the team to align to the strategy so that they could, you know, perform and produce the results. Because it doesn't really matter how great your strategy is if your team doesn't align and execute.
Right.
Like the culture, we should say culture eats strategy for lunch. So And then I would work with the sales team and teach them different types of listening skills, communication skills, presenting skills like that. And it was a passion of mine for a really long time to support people to really fulfill their potential in earning money. And because sales was something I knew naturally, I was a natural born closer because I could just ask the question, do you want it? How do you want to pay for that? Cash or credit, like basically the clothes, mostly because I just wanted to know if they were, like, I was excited for them to buy. So I did that for a really long time because I really was focused on people being able to earn as much as they could earn, because I came from very humble beginnings, to be honest with you. There was a point in time when my mom had married an abusive alcoholic and I was in and out of women's shelters and we lived in government housing. And so my circumstances were less than what other people at my school had. And so I just felt like I had to really work harder, be smarter, especially being a woman. And so when I realized I had a talent for communicating with people, and sales was a good way to express that in the commission check where I wrote my own check, I fell into that. Law school and no longer looked appealing because it was so expensive. I thought that working 60, 70, 80 hours a week as a lawyer, while like it's a high profile position, just that didn't sound good to me. I didn't like the fact that somebody else controlled my paycheck. That didn't sound good to me. I didn't like the fact that I had to depend on a team to perform. That didn't sound good to me. Like, very independent woman.
Yes.
And I did well in the corporate world for quite a while. I had a flashy position traveling across North America, working with these high profile companies, Fortune 500 companies, sales teams making billions and billions and trillions of dollars. Like, quite literally, that was their volume.
Yeah. I saw the name for sure.
Yeah. You take a look at those names. Like, some of them are like, okay, wow. Like, I even look back and I was like, I did that. I'd walk into the room, I'd be like one of two women in the room, 10 years younger than the men in the room, you know, which was a thing. A good looking woman, kind of hard to hide my curves in a suit, you know, with blonde hair. None of that worked for me.
Right, exactly.
It really didn't. I mean, you're kind of conditioned to think that in some ways it does, but it doesn't.
Right. You made clear that in the past, the woman's role was a supporting role. So you were stepping up. Yeah. It wasn't the supporting role, right? So yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Definitely different.
I mean, within 30 seconds of talking, the energy in the room would shift, and then that none of that stuff mattered anymore.
It's that leader.
The leader, the boldness, the audacity that I have to believe in myself that much, to be honest. I did. So one part of my story I forgot to tell you, because I just haven't said it in a while, so I'm a bit out of line, is in terms of order, is I did work at a strip joint as a stripper to put myself through school. I paid off my student loan in like 1 year, which was pretty remarkable.
That's
unheard
of.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the opportunity, and I learned a lot. I learned a lot about humans. I learned a lot about dynamics. I learned a lot about sales. I learned a lot about fear in that environment. I learned a lot about shame and guilt. I mean, it took me a long time to even be able to admit that. I had to hide it for a really long time, and then I just got to a point where it's like, you know, it's something I chose to do, and there's nothing to feel shame about, or, you know. And then, so fast forward again, back to the corporate world. I was about 37 years old and a contract ended and I didn't choose to renew it. And I burned out pretty badly, woke up one day and I just couldn't walk. And that's what stress will do to you, you know? And at the time I didn't really recognize that. And I worked with a chiropractor / osteopath. And she said, you know, Sophie, this is that's a bit of a wake up call for you. Your body's really talking to you. And if you take this next year, look at it like a program, you know, and get yourself back into alignment, you'll bank yourself at the age of 60. And I just thought, oh my God, like, when I'm 60 years old, am I not going to be able to walk? Like, that's not cool.
Right.
So I took some time off work during that time. I was 37. So during that time, I just started to look at different areas of my life. And I could start to see for myself how much I was operating from external validation and needing results and performance and money. I was a very money-driven individual, suppressing other desires like having a baby. And the fast forward a couple of years, you know, I was close to the age of 42 now. My ex-husband, my husband at the time, we were married for 18 years. We chose to consciously uncouple. It was a challenging decision to make because it really is true that couples grow apart, you know. And I had heard that and I didn't understand what that meant. And you can love someone and it's not a fit anymore. And I think we don't talk about that enough. And I think too many people stay in relationships because they're, I don't even know if you want to say in love, but they love and they're attached to the human that they're with and been with for so long, but it's actually just not a fit anymore. He had different goals than I did. I had different goals and, you know, I had to make a choice and that was a hard choice to make.
You
It's
literally
a
grow
hard
apart.
choice. You literally grow apart. He wanted the Lamborghini and the flashy parties and the house in Miami, and I just wanted to chill the fuck out.
Exactly.
So to be honest with you, I didn't really want to work anymore. Like it wasn't a necessity anymore. It wasn't like it's just that drive. And it can become an addiction, like that type of lifestyle. It's like, and society does a really good job at conditioning us to think that that's success, you know? And I had been in a place in my life where every single day I was like, there's gotta be more to life. There's gotta be more to life. Like this can't be it. And it's like I became resigned and apathetic about life. Like there was just a time, it was a time when I was just like that's like I hit my peak. Like, you know, like I had this corporate flashy position and like that was the pinnacle of my life at the age of 37, 8, 9. It's like, wow, that's anticlimactic. So we chose to divorce. I did meet somebody else in the process. And 1 year into the divorce, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I was just like, oh my God, like the pain of going through a divorce, whether you choose to unconsciously uncouple or not, it's still a very painful process, especially after 18 years. And then to go through breast cancer at the same time, it was just like, I felt like my whole body was waxed. Same time.
Because you're still grieving. Because even though it was your choice and that's what you wanted to do as far as the uncoupling, but you know, when you're going through divorce, your life completely changes. So you have to grieve that process. So as you're grieving that process, you realize you have cancer, which, you know, at that point, it's like, did you go through that? Should I stay? Should I have
No.
stayed?
No, not like that. I like
Good. That's good. Because some people use it as an excuse.
Yeah, no, cancer wasn't that for me. I mean, a lot of people have a fuck you cancer story. I have a thank you cancer story. It really anchored in for me my priorities in life. There were many times I thought maybe I made a mistake in leaving, but not because I got cancer. For lots of other vain reasons, like maybe the parties were worth it or the house in Miami was worth it. Not to say I don't have my own money, not to say I didn't
Of
earn my
course.
own money, but to say, to be a woman who's conditioned that the man is the provider, all of a sudden I was like, I'm going to be providing for myself. Not to say that I can't, but there was that, okay, so like, am I really going to do that? Like,
And
I'm
by
really
yourself, you know, you may be able to
going
do a
to.
certain amount by yourself, but when you're coupled,
Yeah.
it becomes bigger, right?
A bigger.
It can become bigger, right?
It can become bigger. And I was over focused on that side of his career. And so all of a sudden now it's like, okay. So yes, I don't want to tell you I didn't have those thoughts because I would be lying, but they didn't come from cancer. Cancer was a defining moment in my life where I realized if I continue to take action in alignment with my fears will become my reality. And they did. And I realized it takes as much energy and focus to choose my fears as it does my dreams. And I got a real hard slap in the face to say, wake up and start to choose my dreams and take action in alignment with my dreams. And so I got very clear and present to the fact that I'd been suppressing a desire to have a baby. I was 42 years old. I had many reproductive issues, like my periods, I wouldn't get like once every 3 months, and I had a lot of pain, and they thought I had endometriosis. I even had a gynecologist at the age of 35 suggest I remove my ovaries because I didn't want to have babies. And I just like I want to say this to the women listening, like you really don't. 35 is still too young.
Don't
It
know.
you still have time, and you just don't fully know. And so unless you have significant severe health complications, and we want to take that part of the population out of it. But if you're just like not sure, please don't make that decision for yourself until you're like 1,002% ready. Because after I didn't want children because I was too ambitious. If I was being very honest with you, I saw them as a trap, as a jail sentence, and that they would take all my money. And after I couldn't use no time and no money as an excuse, I was just like, what am I going to do? Like, buy another pair of red bottoms or get on another plane and go to another beach or eat at another fancy restaurant? Like more of that? And so when I got cancer, it was very evident to me that I wanted to have the opportunity to be a mom. And I was really just saying no because I had many fears and I was with the wrong man. And I spoke to the doctor about it. He told me it was a risk considering it to bring the cancer back. And he had to have very specific conversations with me about what it would be like to be a pregnant woman who got cancer. I had to refuse treatment to get pregnant. They wanted me to, I was not a candidate for chemo, which was great, but I was a candidate for 25 tamoxifen treatment, 25 radiation treatments and 2 years of tamoxifen. So I was 42, and I said to the doctor, if I do 2 years of tamoxifen and 25 radiation treatments after what my body's already been through, I just don't believe there's going to be a hope, like a chance for me. Yes, women get pregnant at 44 all the time. Not all the time, sometimes. Yes, there's fertility treatment, but I do think that it's not cool to normalize women in their late 40s getting pregnant. That's not normal. It happens, it's possible. Not normal. And so I just had this belief that I was capable of getting pregnant, even though I had less than a
Knew
5%
it,
chance.
like you knew
I
it.
just, I like, I knew it. Like there was
Yeah. And
no doubt.
sometimes that's what people don't understand. Like sometimes you can dig within yourself and you know. Like sometimes you do have to take that chance on you because you know, you feel it. Everything that you need is right
Yes.
here in your body, right? So you knew and you listened to that. That is phenomenal.
Yeah, and so I love that you're picking up on that because I think that's like one of the primary messages that I'd like to get across for both men and women. It's like I have to stand in the eye of the storm of a tornado. And you do need to be that strong in life because the way the system is conditioning us for so many different things, it's really challenging to be a human being, to choose your own thoughts, to choose what's right for you. And so the cancer for me was an opportunity to stand in the eye of the storm and just to get really quiet and just like, what is, and that there's just the breeze around and be like, I'm going to keep that and I'm going to keep that. I'm going to let everything else fall away. And like all the flash, all the glamour, like all that glitz. And I just knew that I would be okay if I tried for a baby and I wasn't blessed, but I would not be okay to continue to lie to myself about my fears and have my fears win because I'm okay to live. And so I looked the doctor in the eye and I said, well, I'm going to tell you how it went because I also think that anybody who has a health condition needs to hear this. I said, what are the chances? So they wanted me to do 25 radiation treatments because I had a 30% chance the cancer would come back. I was 42. Women live to 80. That's a long time. That's the rationale. Treatment was going to reduce my chances of getting cancer back by 15%. I was like, okay, well, what if I change my diet, change my coping mechanisms, change my mindset? They're like, well, we don't take that into consideration. I'm like, you want me to put my body through basically hell for a 15% chance that it doesn't come back? The doctor's like, well, people do chemo for a 1% chance, Sophie. And I'm like, but that's so fear-based. And like, why would you even promote that? And he's like, because it's our job, the medical system, to keep you safe. I'm like, safe from what? I said, what is the chance that cancer comes back if I do nothing? He goes, well, that's a different spreadsheet. So you have to think a second for like the way the mind works. Like cancer is like one of those things. It's like if you think about the hierarchy of life, the only thing that gets humans is disease and war. Like there's nothing more, right? So when you're told you have especially cancer, it's like the brain fritzes, like the amount of fear. So
Yeah,
I
it's
feel
immediate fear. I mean, immediate when you just hear, like, they don't even call it, they most times they don't even say cancer. They say the C word. You know what I mean? So it's just, it's so much fear behind that word. You're right.
So I am so great. First of all, like I completely shut down my social network. I was like, I surrounded myself by three women. I was already going through the divorce. And my social network had already pared itself back. And I'm strong and articulate, and I'm good with questions, and I process information quickly. So I could ask those questions, but I feel for people who don't speak the language,
Right.
can't process, don't know the questions to ask, or too scared, like, because that's what the fear does. So I said, what's the chance that the cancer comes back if I do nothing? He says, it's a different spreadsheet. So I said, well, can we look at that spreadsheet, please? He's like, yeah. So he goes into the computer and he's like, okay, so you have an 89% chance that the cancer does not come back systemically in 5 years, and then it'll drop to 82%, and then it drops every 5 years, it's going to drop. I said, okay, hold up. Like, just wait a minute for a second. Are you telling me if I do nothing, there's an 89% chance that the cancer doesn't come back? He says, well, for 5 years, and then it drops. I said, okay. I said, well, is my thinking wrong? Like, am I dumb? Like, just like, help me out here. Am I crazy? Delusional that I think it's okay not to do treatment? Because like 89% chance sounds pretty good. He goes, no, I can align with your thinking. And he goes, and if it does come back locally, we can just do a lumpectomy and take it out again. And I was like, well, why the fuck don't you talk about that?
Why
Like, why
wasn't
are we
that in
not
the
like giving people that
conversation?
option?
It should
Because it doesn't
be.
support. It should be in the conversation. So I chose not to have treatment to get pregnant, understanding the risk. And I just was resolute about it. You know, it really is true. The manifestation process is you just have one focus and everything else falls away. And I just like was in my happy dance with the opportunity, just the opportunity to have a baby, to know that. I think it was even deeper than that. It was like to know I was no longer choosing my fear, to know I was stepping outside of my comfort zone to do something I really wanted in the face of the unknown was just making me proud of myself. And that pride that I had for myself, that self-love, that self-trust, that self-belief, that conviction is what aligned with the universe. And the universe here said, here's a woman who's living in her truth. Let's show the rest of the world what that's like. Bless you, woman. Here you go. And I got pregnant 8 months after my lumpectomy, first try. IH, they did not recommend any type of fertility treatment. The doctor would tell me that at the end of the week they would do their round tables, and I was the eldest in the clinic, and I was having the best pregnancy. And he's like, you're having a miracle pregnancy. And it was during the pandemic, which was not fun. I mean, like, imagine divorce, cancer, pandemic, like a boom, 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 like when the pandemic came. Yeah,
Jeez.
it was a lot. And so fast forward to today, so my baby's now three. He just turned 3 in November. His name is Zane. It means gracious gifts from God. We put him daycare about 18 months. 18 months ago, I was like, okay, what am I doing with myself? Notice I was spending a little too much time on Instagram. And I thought, you know, I'm gonna get back into coaching and mentoring. Like, well, so what? Like, where? Like, who? Like, like God, universe, tell me who's for me to serve. And I was not interested in sales, corporate, or leadership in that capacity, although that was my childhood dream. I was just so over it. I wanted to be building deeper, more intimate relationships with people. I want to talk about the juicier conversations in life, like sex, passion, love, sickness, babies, all that jazz. And so I just thought, I want to help that woman who's going through big transition, big transformation, and who wants to reinvent herself, wants to start showing up differently, who wants a complete life overhaul. I want to support her because I didn't have that. I did surround myself with many professionals, but no one had gone through what I went through. There was nobody who embodied what it was like to stand in the eye of the storm like that. And so I made that conscious choice last year to get into the game, that game. And it was fucking hell because I don't know technology. Like, I knew that social media was the way to go, but like, yeah, I didn't know that. Yeah. So that's enough said about that. And now, 1 year later, I have a beautiful page, like you said. I do all my own posts, I do all my own writing.
It's so beautiful. And I would challenge everyone to go on Instagram and pull up her page if you need any type of inspiration. Or she tells her story so beautifully, just like she did just now. And it's she's just You are, I'm so grateful that God placed it on you to share, because you are really, really, you're encouraging, and it's
Thank
so
you.
bright. I mean, because you everything that you just talked about, it could have been, you could have made it so sad and so, but you're like, no, I am triumphant.
Yes, I have power.
Right, you have power. And that
I
is
have a
what this
say.
page says. Yes. So definitely go on. You talk about to helping women reclaim their power. And I absolutely love that, because we as humans, we have so much power that we don't know about. We don't tune into, right? We just kind of move and listen to the social medias. I was just telling my son a little bit ago, be very careful what you place in your ear gate and your eye gate, because it can change your world. It can change your mindset, and
Yeah.
it'll completely stop you from being able to be who you can be completely.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need certain
Sad.
courage, and fear is big. Fear is all you hear about nowadays is anxiety, fear, sadness, when I'm a firm believer of what you focus on is what will grow. So I love how you said you are in the eye of the storm, right? So that was your focus. So what you focused on in that moment with all of that wind going on around you, right? But your focus was right here, and that is what grew. Ah, that is
Thank you.
powerful. Powerful. I got
Yeah,
chills.
that's personal power right there. Yeah,
It
that shows too. That's personal power, and I'm so happy that you're highlighting that, because there's too many there's not enough talk about that. And in every crisis, there's an opportunity. In
Absolutely.
every crisis, in an opportunity. In the crisis of my divorce, I got the opportunity to reinvent my life. In the crisis of cancer, I got the opportunity to choose myself in a new way. You know, heartbreak and crisis is an opportunity for you to get your dreams fulfilled. I mean, there are so many things that I couldn't do inside of my marriage that I now can, and that's an opportunity. I didn't actually even know how to make an adult decision on my own. Not to say that my ex-husband made my decisions for me. It wasn't like that at all. Like many people thought I wore the pants, and not to dismiss him as a man. It was not about that. We were two very independent, successful individuals independently and together. But I feel like we don't talk enough about what it's like for a human, him too, I'm sure, if you were to talk to him. Like you, we grew up together, 23 to 42 years old. I mean, I didn't even know where I was too scared to move neighborhoods, like a neighborhood, like, you know, the amount of fear that gets put into play. And so I just love that you're highlighting the fact that we have personal powers, human beings. We have a say. If you continue to buy into the fear mongering, which is like what irritates me so much, you're going to start to take actions in alignment with that fear mongering, which is not your desire, which is not how the manifestation process works, which is not being a co-creator with the universe or God, you know. And God wants you to stay in trust. You need to move forward 1 foot in faith, 1 foot in your leadership. And that's another thing we don't talk about. You know, and so I don't watch TV, because it's just like you gotta just like stay in your own lane, focus on what your desire is, and know that you have a say, and the universe has a say. The universe has a say.
Yes, for sure. I love how you said you have 1 foot in faith and 1 foot in leadership. Like that shows that that faith is where you believe in something that is unknown, something that is not seen, something that you may see in your head, but it is not tangible at the moment. And then 1 foot in leadership, because you have to do the movement in order to make it happen.
Yeah, I love that
That is so
anticipation. Yeah.
good.
Yeah,
So
I know. I've
good.
been coming up with such great things lately. I mean, like, it's just like,
Just good stuff.
that's how you have to move. Yeah, it's good. Yeah,
Absolutely.
thank you. It's like, it's not even that you maybe see it, because I'm gonna be honest with you. I didn't see exactly how this mentorship was gonna play out for me. I actually was open to doing sales and leadership stuff in case nothing else worked out. Like I think inside, you know. And I would like to just reframe what you said a little bit and say, you don't have to have the vision. You have to follow the feeling. And you have to trust that much to follow that feeling before you actually see what that feeling is showing you. I mean, like, I feel emotional right now because it's just like, how many times do we not listen to that feeling, your intuition, right? And how much does that cost us?
So many.
Like, how much? Oh, like every day?
And it's so funny because, like, right now I'm in a position where I've been moving toward this feeling, this situation that I know I'm supposed to bring the world. I know this, but you get very comfortable in where you are. Get comfortable in the financial, you get comfortable in all of these different places. And that is what stops you from having that faith. Right.
Right.
And I was just talking to someone today because as I am navigating, of course, things are trying to pull me in the area that is not where I'm supposed to be. But it's because of that comfort that I have. It stops me from saying no. But I'm supposed to say no because I know what I'm supposed to be doing. Right. So you are absolutely correct. It's so many times that even when we know what we're supposed to do, that we will silence that feeling. We will stifle it. And in order to do something that feels comfortable to the world, right? Rather than going with that internal, because everything that we're supposed to do, we have those feelings and we have to acknowledge them in our bodies. This is all of the answers. It's right here. It really is. So,
and that's the sellout, you know. I also don't think we're talking enough about how we're breaking our own hearts. You know, every single time you don't listen to yourself, you break your own heart. Every time a woman doesn't uphold her boundaries with a man or who her partner is, she's breaking her own heart and she wants to blame him. Yeah, of course we want to blame him. The wanting, the desire to blame someone else is fine, but the doing so is a victim mentality.
Yes.
You and only you as a woman have the power to uphold the boundary and the standard. And every time you don't uphold your boundary, you teach him or her, whoever your partner is, and the people around you that it's okay to disrespect you because you just disrespected yourself. And we don't talk about that. We talk about boundaries, but we don't talk about the implication of that. And that is where the heartbreak begins. I would go as far as to assert no one can break your heart as bad as you can. You're the one who breaks your heart worse than any other, right? And yet what we do is we won't want to take responsibility for that. And so we blame our parents, we blame our children, we blame our ex-lovers, we blame our current partners, we blame the system. And the truth of the matter is exactly what you've just been saying, is we've suppressed what we know is true for us. The whisper from the universe, the whisper from God, it's a whisper from some greater source and all omnipotent knowing. And we choose to ignore it. And that's the break.
Yes.
We lose our self-confidence. We lose our self-beliefs. We lose our self-conviction. We lose our self-trust, our self-esteem, our self-worth. And that's how toxic partners come into our lives. That's how toxic people come into our lives. And again, we choose to just like be a victim to that. And I'm happy that this is a platform I got to say that, because I believe more women, men too. I don't live the conditioning that a man lives. And so that's the choice I made, is absolutely to support the women. But it's not to say I wouldn't work with a man, but that right there, not upholding your non-negotiables, not upholding your standards, not communicating your needs and desires, not walking away when you see a red flag, those, and that will make you sick. And that's the reason I believe I got cancer. I was a fucking queen at not upholding my standards or my boundaries in my personal relationships.
I mean, like,
but now the money was attached. It's weird.
Yeah. They say, you know, you teach people how to treat you, right? We do, but we also need to watch how we're treating ourselves.
Well, yeah, because you know, that's so brilliant, because that is how you teach someone else to treat you. It's how you treat yourself, how you speak to yourself, how you speak about yourself, how you speak to other people, your belief systems, your limiting belief, all of that. And it comes out in your language. And we're unconscious to how we're communicating. And a lot of it is inherited from our parents. And so that's generationally passed down. And should we choose to not do the work, then we're not an evolution of the past. We're just stuck in the past.
Ding, ding, ding. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
Oh, I could talk to you all day. So I do want to get into a couple questions. So good. So you talk about
Sure.
emotional regulation and how it has a lot to do with personal power. Can you explain that?
Yes. So, this has to do with triggers. So I think that we are most triggered by our parents and our children. I just think about how life is. And so I'm going to use it as an example, and then that will like open it up for people to apply it into different contexts. So you go visit your parents and you're like, oh yeah, now I remember why I don't want to go visit my parents. They do something, they say something, it triggers you. You have an emotional outburst, you lash out in some way, or you're somebody who doesn't communicate how they're feeling in the moment, and you get pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed, and then you lash out. The inability to communicate your needs, your wants, your desires, your boundaries, however you're feeling in the moment, and the cycle of constantly lashing out, that emotional chaos, that disruption, it stops you from being able to produce the results that you want, because oftentimes what it does is it throws you into a guilt and shame cycle. None of us want to lash out like that. That's not an authentic way of being. So when we operate or behave in a way that isn't aligned with who we want to be or who we know ourselves to be, it causes guilt and shame. And that guilt and shame are the lowest emotional vibrations, vibrational emotions, and there's no power. You have no power in guilt and shame. So when you can regulate your emotions, so take the emotional charge out of something that doesn't cause you to lash out, you can communicate in the moment, you have power. You hold your power. You don't give your power away to some nasty comment someone made, or something that someone does that kind of makes you feel off. And if you really think about it, it's weak, since it's the best word I have in this moment, to give your power away to someone's one comment. If somebody can take you off your throne with one comment, what queen are you? What king are you?
That's good.
Like that.
That's really, really good. Oh my gosh. So I love that because, and I'm glad that you said that guilt and shame, it's the lowest vibration. Like literally, it truly is. There is zero power in that. So, how do you feel as though women can reclaim their power? You know, we were talking about how sometimes they seem to take the support role, or, you know, if there is a
Right.
woman out there that's really not feeling empowered, what would be your suggestions to them to reclaim?
Yeah, there's three areas that I feel like a woman has the opportunity to develop for herself. So one is conditioning. We really need to start to pay more attention to what society tells us is a woman's role, like gender roles. Like that's just, it's a societal construct. It's made up. And so for a woman to feel like she can't be a leader, or she needs to stay home, or she can't be direct or aggressive or whatever it is in her communication, like that, she's losing her power to that. So now she's suppressing herself. She's not communicating her needs because she doesn't want to look weak. She needs to put the needs of the family first because that's the way it goes. Well, she's not actually taking care of herself too, which is putting her health at risk.
Yes.
So there's a way of important to take your power back. It's about understanding your fears. So, like this whole thing that women need to be beautiful, or we lose our looks as we get older, like that, you don't want to be with a man and make more money than him. Like all these things that, you're gonna, if you leave a man, you're gonna end up destitute because that's how it was back 50 years ago. Like all of those fears, like we really need to like face them and understand what's real and what's not real. That's important. And then the other area for her to take her power back is her, and this is the most important, is her relationship with herself.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the most important relationship a woman can have, is a relationship with herself. So back to, if she's disrespecting herself, for example, by not upholding her boundaries, the relationship with herself is off. So we need to reconnect her to herself. to her belief, to trusting herself, to her confidence, to her esteem, to her worth, to her self-respect. When she has that, she has power. Mm. When she doesn't have that, she's disempowered.
Yeah.
So those would be the three areas. If you only had one to work on, I would say you got to work on your relationship with yourself.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah.
Yes. So in your, you have programs where you work with women in order to help them reclaim their power, whether it's in love or money or, you know, talk about your programs a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So right now I have the program. It's called the Reinvention Process. It's a process where I support women to really reinvent every area of their life, most specifically reinvent how they see themselves. And so that is the place where we go to work on their thoughts, making sure they're choosing their independent thoughts versus the conditioned thought, which is why I was able to say no to cancer treatment. It's like, that's how it shows up, which is why I was able to get blessed with a baby. Like, that's the manifestation of it. We go to work on rebuilding your self-esteem, your self-respect, your relationship with yourself by understanding your self-sabotaging patterns, by understanding what triggers you, by understanding how you lash out, by understanding how you can regulate yourself. Like, we go to work on that, by understanding how you break your own commitments, by understanding what your limiting beliefs are, or how you're talking to yourself as a woman. Like, we go to work on that. We also go to work on forgiveness, because forgiveness of self and forgiveness of others. Because harboring any type of resentment, anger, judgment, blame is not power. You can't be in your power and be angry.
Right.
You can't be in your power and blame.
Yes.
You can't be in your power and have guilt. Like, that's not, they don't coexist in the same moment. So we talk about those sorts of things. And then it's about really just doing, deepening the work. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's how it goes. And sure. This type of work is an unfolding. It never ends.
Yes. And I love that, you know, you talk about toxic communication, you talk about shame and guilt. And I just want people to understand, like, you really, if you're in your program, you're doing the work. You're doing all your, we always say you have to unlearn to relearn.
Yes. So
unlearn a lot of habits. You know, again, about that, what you focus on is what will grow. So if you're always focusing on the negativity or what has gone wrong in your past and all of that, that's what will grow. You know, that's the
yeah.
plants that you're going to get. And those are poisonous. I will say that.
Yeah. They make you sick. It makes you
yes,
sick.
It absolutely makes you sick. And I just wish that we could understand all of this stress and anxiety and all of that we're feeling, that leads to the high blood pressure. It's a lot that is not talked about, because again,
yeah, so,
some of the companies I've worked with. So I'm here to tell you, it's a lot that we don't understand that we place on ourselves, because we take on this stress and we're not listening to our bodies. We're not honoring ourselves. And so all of those things have consequences.
Yeah, I want to build on what you just said there, because I have a linear process for it, which might make people to understand it. So the more stress you have, the more negative thinking you have, the more it increases your blood pressure for sure. And the more it increases your inflammation. The more you have inflammation in the body, the more susceptible you are to rheumatoid arthritis, all those things, endometriosis, lupus, cancer. And so stress directly is correlated to that type of sickness. And stress is directly correlated to negative thinking. And so all of what you're saying there, it's so beautifully said, because we actually have the power to make ourselves sick or not.
Yes, we do.
It really is that.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So I want the audience to, you know, absolutely look Sophie up. Go on her Instagram page. Will you let them know where your Instagram name is?
Yes, it's at the THE Sophie SOPHIE Delaurier DESLAURIERS. And you can find everything there. It's the easiest way to get me.
And I'm telling you, it's a fabulous page. It's a fabulous page. I will go on even later on today, because It's just beautiful. It's so many things that I want to screenshot and so many feelings, especially, you know, like I told you earlier, we're at the beginning of the year. So people are really thinking about what they want this year to be, what they want to accomplish, who they want to be, you know, who is it that I'm going to look at, you know, January 9th, 2025? Who am I going to look at? And who does the person that I'm looking at today have to do in order to be that person? So a lot of that they can find on your page. I'm
Yeah,
in
thank you.
so yes, absolutely. So check out Sophie, check out her page, contact her. She does fantastic work. She has done the work in her own life and she can help you do the work in yours. So I ask all my guests, if you could leave one last nugget with the audience, what would it be?
Here's yourself. First and foremost, it's not your job to manage anyone else's feelings. Disappoint them. Don't disappoint yourself, and then everything else will line up.
Oh, that's fantastic. My motto this year is mind my own business. I'm
Yeah.
minding my
Yes.
own business this year.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good one. No drama.
That's right. Minding my own business and choosing me. Those two words are powerful. Choose you. Yes, absolutely. Well, first, Sophie, thank you. Thank you so much. This has been fantastic. I appreciate your
Thank
patience. Nobody knows all of the technical issues I had
you.
earlier. So thank you for your
Okay.
patience. I knew it was going to be fantastic because when the podcast, when the episodes are this good, the enemy is always trying to stop
Yeah. Yes, true.
it.
Good point.
So thank you so
Thank you so
much.
much.
And audience, I want you to remember that you matter and your story matters. And I know that you can choose any podcast and you chose this one. And I thank you. So until next time, you have a fantastic day. Bye.
Bye.
I understand that nothing is more valuable than your time. So thank you for listening. Be sure to join our Facebook group, Codependent Me, and check out my website at codependentme.org. Thanks so much. Have a great day.